Krista,
welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
For everybody who does not know, you have an interesting background. You started off diving very late. You were, what, 20
when
you
started diving? 20 years old.
Let's track back. You started in Minden. You grew up in Garnerville, mm-hmm. which is kind of near Minden.
Yep.
So grew up there. You did gymnastics. You've done trampoline. Then you went to diving. You started diving when you were 20. You now have a handful of national championships, and you've turned that into an Olympic medal. And it's just this very short track, an interesting track, because it's very not traditional to the sport. And I'm interested on, you know, how you got started, where that picked up from, how you transitioned from the sport. So, I mean, give me more on your background of how you grew up and how you got started in gymnastics and trampoline, and then how that transitioned into the sport.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that do get into diving have somewhat of a gymnastics background, but I think the unique part of my story and my background, it involved the sport of trampoline. And it's still, I feel, such a new and upcoming sport, but they added it to the Olympic Games in 2000. And so, I mean, ever since I was a kid, 5 years old, I really wanted to go to the Olympic Games. And at that time, I was a gymnast and pursuing my sport, the sport of gymnastics, just seeing how far I could get. But I had so many injuries along my way. And I think all those roadblocks really kind of developed into this story of how I just became stronger from each one of those. Mm-hmm. And it really just put my mind to the test of like, how far do I want to take this and how much am I willing to push through and endure to accomplish my dream of becoming an Olympian one day.
Mm-hmm. And so on the gymnastics side, when did you start doing gym?
5 years old.
And then you did that for how long?
7 years.
Yep. Okay. So you started real young. Mm-hmm. And then that transitioned. How far did you take that?
So throughout gymnastics, I think gymnastics gave me such a good background. I did that. I never competed internationally with gymnastics, but I got into a program called TOPS National Team Testing. And so mm-hmm. that was always, that was strength and conditioning. And that was kind of the buildup to becoming a high-level gymnast. And I had gone to Bella Crowley's camp and way back when, you know, in Texas. And
Is that a thing anymore?
No, sadly.
Okay.
I love those days. Like, that was so much fun to go with some of my closest teammates and go camp in the forest in Texas and, like, do what you love to do, gymnastics, live, breathe, you know,
mm-hmm.
and do what you love to do. So, so that was really fun. I love the sport of gymnastics. And a lot of my life, I was actually commuting up to Reno for gymnastics just because there was better facilities up here, better, you know, coaching and just access to higher level sport up here. And so I was commuting. My parents took me an hour drive there, an hour drive back. And, you know, a lot of times my mom would stay for a 4 hour practice because she didn't want to drive home another hour to come back another hour. So a lot of my life, I mean, I grew up in a small town and
very, very small town. Reno's small, but
right
down there it's more farming, correct?
Yes. And not a lot of huge opportunities for sport. And I mean, there were talks throughout my athletic career with my parents of how are we going to make this work? Should we, like, because a lot of gymnastic centers didn't have tall enough ceilings to fit a trampoline in, you know, to be able to jump and do my sport to the highest level. And we had chatted one time about getting a barn and like buying a trampoline and just being able to train in good old like Minden, Nevada. So it's funny to think about like where I grew up and knowing that, you know, I really did come across the right opportunities, but I'm really grateful for my parents and how much they put into my sport and really just helping me chase what I love to do, and giving me the resources that I needed to to do it.
And
so
you really had to chase and find those resources based on, you know, where you grew up, which is very, you know, a lot of people grow up in an area that already has the program, already has the pool, already has, you know, whatever it may be, but that's a long drive multiple times a week.
It was a lot. I'd get out of school early to go, you know, drive up to Reno. But yeah, I did gymnastics for 7 years, and I really do thank God for this background, because I think it gave me the strength and the foundation. And really, I mean, gymnasts train hard, you know, 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. Sometimes, you know, if you're up to the level, you'll add a Saturday practice. It's a split practice and it's 6 hours, you know, you mm-hmm. train three, you have a little lunch break, and then you train another 3 hours. So I put a lot of effort and time and commitment into this gymnastics background that, you know, really did give me a lot of the foundation of strength and, you know, sport background that mm-hmm. diving now has a part of it. So
it's pretty cool. I mean, I think a lot of divers have either that, most of them have a gymnastics background, because mm-hmm. starting off in diving traditionally is kind of, I wouldn't say it's odd, but it's not super normal versus having a gymnastics background and then going into the sport.
Yep.
So you did gymnastics, you started off there, then you had, what made you get out of gymnastics?
I think honestly, my knee injury that I had, it was the first real big traumatic injury I had. And it took me out for a year. It was at the age of 12, and it took a long time to recover from. It was a really strange and rare injury for a 12-year-old to have. Mm-hmm. And I think that year off really gave my body time to kind of catch up, and I grew super tall. I came back to gymnastics, or tried to, with an entirely new body, because, you know, I think gymnasts, their height is stunted because of how intense the training is. And so when I gave my body that year off to really recover from my injury, I tried to come back to gymnastics, and it was a challenge, because I grew a lot taller and just really transformed into a whole different way. So that was kind of interesting. But I think when I came back, it was right around the time where we had a trampoline program move into the gym, and I had never known about this sport. Somebody had told me that it became an Olympic event, and I just was really interested, and I did a lot of research on who does trampoline at the highest level and what does it look like. And I saw this girl that was on the trampoline team at my gym, and I just thought, this is amazing. This sport is so beautiful. I've always loved the trampoline, and why can't I do it? So that was what kind of initiated my transfer into a different sport at that time. And I would have thought it would have been easier on my body, but not necessarily. but I transferred into trampoline, but I was also doing gymnastics at the same time. So I did a little bit of both, and I think that helped me realize, okay, which one do I like better and what do I want to pursue? And I think I was phasing out of gymnastics at that time. And so it was really exciting to kind of begin a new sport and learn a whole nother category of, you know, skills. And I think that trampoline really gave me a lot of aerial awareness that mm-hmm. gymnastics never gave me. You know, on the trampoline, you're doing multiple flips and multiple twists, and you're always having to know where you're at on the trampoline, or else you don't want to go flying off. That's the biggest goal. And so I think trampoline gave me a lot of the spatial awareness that the gymnastics just didn't. And it really taught me beauty and grace and form, and just how to become perfect, how to look perfect in the air, you mm-hmm. know? And so I loved this sport. I competed nationally and internationally for trampoline for 8 years. So I did for a good amount of time. Yeah. Okay. Longer than gymnastics.
So the trampoline side of it, I mean, what was you transitioned from gymnastics. What different skills did you have to learn? Were you more, was it a lot of branny outs? Was it a lot of, you know, where were you? I don't know trampoline at all. There's 0% of me that knows. I mean, I know branny because I see it from high diving.
Yes.
Because they have to branny out.
Yep.
And so, I mean, front flip, half twist, you can see where you're at, know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, do you still have blind landings when you're doing trampoline? Is the DD degree of difficulty the same? How's the judging? How's the scoring? What's that like relative to gymnastics or relative to diving?
So trampoline, you have, when you compete, you have a list of 10 skills. And so you build a routine with basically the highest degree of difficulty you can. Like, how many flips and how many twists can you fit in to one skill? But you can't repeat skills. So you want to have a good degree of difficulty to be able to like help your overall score. Mm-hmm. But you build 10 skills together, what you can do. You can do a branny with a single flip. You can do a like branny out, which is a double somersault with a half twist out of it. Mm-hmm. And then some people do trifs, which is, you know, a triple with a branny out. Mm-hmm. So
you're kind of a branny out. So it's a quad.
It's a triple with a half twist out of it. Yeah. And some of the crazy, like the men's trampoline is really fun to watch. You know, if you look on YouTube, find Dong Dong from China, he's like, he was the top. And I remember watching him when I was competing, and he would do first five skills of his routines would be a variation of some type of triple. Mm-hmm. Flip, triple somersault, you know, and now these men are adding, you know, 1.5 twists out of their trifs. So it's really like people are pushing the limits of this sport, and the trampolines are getting better and bouncier. And it's just, it's a really cool sport to watch. And it's just not popular enough. Like, people don't know about it, but it's an Olympic event. And I think that, you know, people should know about it. It is a really cool sport.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's something I wouldn't do because I don't trust my spotting skills.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I mean, you jump on the trampoline and you have four people on each corner that are there basically, like, if you're going to fly off, they're just going to try to push you back onto the trampoline or...
Catch you?
I don't know.
Have they caught you before?
Never, like, caught me, but they've always pushed me back onto the trampoline because around the trampoline, there's... little mats, you know, and so, and typically in a training of trampoline, like a day of training, you're flying off the trampoline often. Like,
really?
And we have big mats on the ends of the trampoline. And so if you do fly off, you fly off onto a mat that has a trampoline under it. So it's a soft landing.
Oh, it has a trampoline under it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're surrounded by trampolines on all edges, but then.
Except the sides, just the ends.
So what about the sides?
That's where, like, it's kind of sketchy.
Why don't they put them there?
They should. No, on one side of the trampoline, they'll have somebody with a mat. Like, if you needed somebody to throw a mat in to, like, save your fall.
Save, quote unquote, because how much can you save from hitting
the floor? Just give a little bit of a cushion, we'll say. Yeah. So there's, like, I guess some safety measures that we do follow. But it is a sketchier sport, and a lot of trampolines are in ground. So that, you know, if you do fly off the edge, like, you want to kill your bounce before you do, but you won't go flying onto the ground, which is 6 feet down, you know? So a lot of trampolines will either be in ground or they'll have the trampoline above ground with added whatever sides just to make sure that you're not going to fly off too far.
No way. Have you launched off?
Oh, yeah. Many times. I mean... it's kind of the nature of it, and you learn how to fall. Like, yeah, you kind of, like, trampoline teaches you these, like, cat instincts that you just never had in your life.
Yeah, of course.
Until you, like, get into these situations where you're flying off the trampoline and you need to learn how to, like, land on your feet or save it. So it is pretty wild. I had a good teammate one time. He totally is a cat. I swear to you. I was like, he would go flying off any way – but land on his feet somehow. And that, I mean, you got to know how to practice your sport safely. And
yeah,
there was a lot of risk in the sport. And
safely, with air quotes.
Yes.
I mean, did you get injured doing that?
Yeah. So I had another 2 knee injuries from that. So I've had a total of 3 knee surgeries.
Oh, wow.
And I still, in my right knee, I don't have an ACL currently. So I train without an ACL. Yeah. And it's been a couple of years running that I haven't had one. And your body learns to adapt to it. And there's definitely a lack of stability. And I know what movements and exercises I really can't do to kind of stay away from it. But yeah, I've had a couple knee injuries there. And that's really what actually pushed me out of the sport of trampoline too, is injuries. And I mean, there's been a lot of roadblocks in my journey, but I think my motto in my life has always been to be stronger than I was before my injury. Mm-hmm. And I think with that in the back of my mind, through everything I've been through, has really pushed me and elevated me to where I am today. And, you know, if I didn't have those injuries, I probably wouldn't be in the sport of diving either. So
yeah,
it kind of led me to where I am too.
Now, those knee injuries, now that you don't have an ACL, like what can you and can you not do? I mean, what, I have no clue what an ACL dictates you can do.
It's a lot of, so it gives you stability between like your upper leg and your lower leg. Okay. So picture me on a water skis. This is the sketchiest thing for me to do because the water skis, like I don't have any control of my right foot when it's being like played with, you know, external factors of like water, you know? And so I don't have the stability to keep it together the way it should be.
So that's why you snowboard and you don't ski.
Yes, exactly. Yes, don't tell coach to snowboard, but yes.
Yeah, but you take it very lightly.
Yeah, it's better. Mm-hmm. My feet are strapped in for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Growing up here, you have to snowboard or ski. It's, you know, you've lived for some time now.
It's world class.
Yeah.
And it's still, you can still ski right now. It's June 7th. And we still have till the 4th of July. Alpine does not close until then.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then Mammoth, I believe, doesn't close until August.
This has been a crazy winter.
Yeah, yeah. It's been nuts. It's been nuts.
Taking advantage of that?
Yeah, full advantage. I mean, there's too much fun to be had here. I mean, I'm not diving anymore. There's so many other sports that you realize you can do after diving.
Right.
That you're like, oh my gosh, these are all so much fun.
Yeah. You sacrifice so much when you're doing your sport. And then I think after you retire, you kind of realize, oh, I don't have to sacrifice that. I can do that.
I can go lose my mind on all these other sports. And there's so much fun to be had, especially here in Reno, Tahoe.
That's so cool. I'm glad you've been enjoying it here too.
Yeah.
Picked up a lot of hobbies.
Snowboarding. I mean, skiing, not for me. I'm more of a board guy.
Yep.
Snowboarding, you know. Backpacking, climbing, you name it, rock climbing like crazy. We climb during the week, and then on the weekends it's snowboarding, but then once that's over, there's hunting season, there's so many different things.
Yeah, you've been hunting a lot and fishing too, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm going on a fishing trip. Well, I leave tonight, and I'm going on a fishing trip tomorrow in Oregon because it's like a 4-hour drive to the Rogue Elk River.
Nice.
And there's like a
spearfishing
I wish.
I remember the first time I met you, you told me you spearfished.
Yeah, I know.
And I was like, what? This guy is crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's fun. But the fishing we're doing is just on a river. So we're gonna catch some salmon, trout, see if we can get something. We're going Bend. We're going all the way up to Bend. We're gonna hang out at like the Chutes River and go to all the breweries, see all the fun stuff. So
you eat what you catch.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Hopefully we'll be I'm car camping on the way up there. So hopefully we'll get fish. We'll be grilling that up on the way. We'll see.
Living out of your car?
Yeah, yeah. Not living, but camping out of it. It's fun. That's what everybody does here.
That is really cool.
It's a lifestyle you'll be able to have once you're done diving.
Yes, I know. I dream about it, quite honestly.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I really just want to do that I haven't been able to do.
Like?
Definitely a lot of snowboarding, wakeboarding. Mm-hmm. Wakeboarding. I mean, I could still wakeboard.
Wake surf.
And wake surfing is one of the coolest things in the world.
And it's not hard on you. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
And you fall down, you're fine.
It's true, yeah. Yep. Well, I still wakeboard and wake surf with my sport background, but it's fine.
Just don't tell your coach.
Exactly,
she won't be listening to this.
Yeah. I'd love to mountain bike a little bit more, though.
I just got a bike.
Did you?
Yeah.
So cool.
It's so dangerous.
I think I'm going to cheat the system, though, and I might get a little bit of an E mountain bike.
No. You got
to
learn.
Just to help out, just in case.
You
got to
learn traditionally. It's just the downhill that's scary.
Oh, I love the downhill. That's the best part. Place me on top of the mountain and just let me go.
I've gone over the handlebars like twice now.
Oh, gosh.
And I just got this bike.
Oh, no.
It gets dicey. Get a good helmet.
Yeah. It takes a lot of upper body strength going downhill. You wouldn't think about it, but it really does because you're like leaning forward and all the, you know, pressures on your upper body.
And having that drop seat, you know what drop seat is?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Having a drop seat, I didn't know. Like, And having full suspension, I had, I rode, the first time I rode was a hardtail, meaning it just had suspension, anything in the front. And it beats you up. And then my buddy's like, oh, you can ride mine now and see what it's like. I'm like, dude, why are you putting me on this garbage bike when I could be riding, you know, that?
Like, encourage you to buy your own bike?
I bought the bike that I rode, I bought from him, and then he got a new bike.
Nice.
So now I got full suspension. Score. I got the drop seat. So when you're going downhill, you drop the seat all the way down so you can kind of like lean back and the seat doesn't keep hitting you in the ass.
That's amazing.
And then uphill, you can put the seat up and sit down.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's just a little button you push on your handlebars.
Oh, it's electric, so it's just like you can maneuver this while you're riding.
It's not even electric. It's like air. It's like a seat that we're sitting in right now. If you pull the lever, you go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. That's just a button on your handlebar.
Oh, cool.
So you just stand up, push the button, and it comes up.
Wow.
When you get a mountain bike, make sure you get one with a drop seat.
Yes, I will get a mountain bike after I'm done with my diving career.
After you're done diving. Don't tell Jim Lee.
We're not done yet, though.
Yeah. So, okay, back to the diving side of things. Well, the trampoline side of things. You did trampoline for 8 years. You competed internationally. From that, how did it go internationally? Was that fun? Did you want to keep going? You got injured again. You had no ACL. Mm-hmm. When was the point where you're like, all right, I need to switch. I need to do something else. What drew that line?
Yeah, I think, well, after my second right knee injury, that was really when I tried to come back into it, and quite honestly had a lot of fear around my injury because I had done it a second time. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was kind of a realization of just because they fixed it doesn't mean it's going to be fixed for life. And I think that's what scared me. And I, you know, I tried to return to trampoline, and I had a lot of fear, wondering if I was strong enough, wondering if I was going to do it again. And I didn't want to do it again. And I also thought about the rest of my life in terms of, you know, I have one body for the rest of my life. Like, let's kind of keep it as healthy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really kind of a realization moment of maybe this is not worth it in the long run, you know, for the health of my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's kind of what like phased me out of it. A lot of my friends at that time were going to college, and I was kind of just doing the sports thing and, you know, living a life of no school. And I was like, okay, maybe I should think about my future a little bit more. So
when you were doing trampoline, you decided, like, you were 18, you're like, I could go to college or I'm going to keep doing trampoline.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm doing trampoline.
Yep. Okay. And I moved off to California for a good amount of time before World Age Group Championships, which is kind of the junior level of world championships. And so I moved off to California to train alongside a really good team up there that had, you know, high level athletes and good coaches too, and good facility as well. And so it was me kind of like sacrificing a lot of my life to chase after my dream and give it almost one last shot, mm-hmm. I believe, at mm-hmm. that time. And then that's where I really developed that last injury. And that's what, you know, phased me out. It was like, should I just move back home, you know, from California back to Carson City, Nevada, to like go to school, you know? And I think during that time I had to have a surgery, and it just gave me time to really think about life. And so that's kind of what I ended up doing, is phasing out of trampoline and kind of living a NARP life, you know?
For how long?
About a year and a half to 2 years.
Okay, so you took some decent time off.
Yeah, I definitely had some time to, like, you know, grow a little bit of a belly and get...
Drink some beer,
you know, enjoy life and not be an athlete. And, you know, I am grateful for that time. I think it really... I was able to live out my younger years. And then I think when I came into diving, it was like, oh, I'm willing to do those sacrifices all over again because I've got another chance, you know? And I think that's what's cool is, you know, transferring into diving, I really just started it for fun. I met a friend who dove, and I was like, let me try this, like at
Where
the Minden
that?
Pool.
No way.
Yeah. And he was the only ones that could he was the only one that could change the fulcrum at the time at that pool. They gave him the freedom to do that because they trusted him. He was a really good diver. Eddie Kolar, I don't know if you ever hear that name,
no,
but
yeah.
If you do, he's the one
shout out to Eddie.
Shout out to Eddie. He really began, that's how my diving career began, is he was the one that said, you should go up to Reno and meet Jin Lee, the coach at, you know, University of Nevada. And I think that was what like gave me that initial push of like, okay, maybe I should just do this because it is taking a lot of my background of gymnastics and trampoline and, you know, and I could just do it for fun. It's not like there's any pressure, mm-hmm. but I could still flip and twist and all that. And so that's like the initial thing that got me going. I mean, we played around on those boards and at the time those boards were just a little old.
They still are.
They still are. We're working on that.
Yeah, we are. We are working on that. So you dove there and then when did you start diving with Jin Lee? How'd that transition go?
So I ended up just calling her after we went to the pool and dove around a little bit, you know, everything Yeah, and he was like, you got to call her. So I did. I left a message for her just telling her my background of sports and background of injuries and stuff. And I just said, you know, I know you have a club team. I'd love to come up there and just try it out. And she called me back right away and was like, okay, come on up. Like, let's see, you know, and we have a trampoline at our pool. And that's where she initially wanted to see what I knew how to do. And she just kind of said, jump around on the trampoline, like show me your background, you know, what flips you know how to do. And I think she hadn't seen what a real like trampolinist looked like, uh-huh. you know, and it was a black bed trampoline, like nothing special, yeah. you know, so I couldn't do like all my flips and stuff that I like knew how to do. But she really, I think, saw potential and saw a lot of talent in me that she was like, we might be able to turn this into something. And so she had me dive on her club team for a couple months, but I think it was 3 months into it where she called me on the phone and was like, I want you on our college team. I have a spot for you and I want you on now. And she called me in like October. So she wanted me on mid-semester.
So she had a scholarship for you?
Nope. I was a walk-on student athlete.
No way.
Yeah. My first year especially. So I was a walk-on that first year. I kind of sorted my life together. I lived with a family, moved in with someone up here in Reno and walked on to the college team. And my first diving meet was conference championships, and she had me learn a whole 5 meter platform list too.
So wait, what was
and
your
I've
list?
Been diving for 3 months. I did standing 105C on 5 meter. I did 203B. I did 303B.
Okay.
I did 403C, and I did 5233.
Okay.
And then actually, then once we got to conference, she hated my 303B because you know, I'd never done that movement before, reverse somersault off platform. And so, or I was 203B that she hated. So she moved me up. She said, I want you to go on 7 meter and I want you to do 203A. And I learned 203A in practice and competed it like the next day at conference. I finished all like 17th place. So I was like one spot outside of like top 16.
But you were fine with it? Or were you scared?
I was frightened. Yeah. I had never done platform before. Like I remember the first time I jumped off 10 meters, like when I was a 12-year-old kid, I was a gymnast. I jumped off platform 10 meter and I put my arms out.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Not great idea. Somebody even told me right before I did it to not do that.
And I mean, you're a kid. You don't know.
I know. And it's my instinct as a gymnast. I'm like, yeah. Gotta stick my landing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You had no issues, I'm assuming, finding where you were doing these dives then.
I think that was that's what kind of gave me a little bit of confidence in learning new things is mm-hmm. I know where I'm at in the air.
Yeah, you know exactly where you're at. But was it weird going from landing on your feet to then landing on your head and learning in an entry?
Because of my trampoline background, not really.
Okay.
I had a challenge making a good entry.
Like, okay.
I remember, you know, my watching conference dives from that first year, I would do a great top to my dive, but then I'd pike down and then all of a sudden I'd use my chest to come out and it would just be like, wow, that was a beautiful top. What happened? Like Jin Lee said, I made a lot of bombs my first year.
I could hear her voice saying that.
And it took me years to figure out how to rip an entry. And that was a lot of, you know, there were bad habits that actually came from trampoline, bad habits for diving in terms of, you know, when we come out on the trampoline, it's come out with your lower body and upper body. Your full body is kicking out. Oh. And I think that was really hard for me when I started diving to, you know, land on my head, but really not use my upper body. It was all lower body movements. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have that mind-body connection. And so I do have to say, yes, it was a challenge for sure to learn how to make a proper entry.
I never would have thought of that.
I could get to my head.
Because in trampoline, you're just wanting to get, all right, stop.
Yeah. Yep.
And like, this is where I'm going. I'm mm-hmm. stopping immediately. We're diving. It's like, oh, show how fast you can flip, mm-hmm. but then come out, stay real tight, and then line up and get to your line.
And control. Yep. It's a lot of control that I really didn't have.
I mean, yeah, control of I think it's more of not control of like, you had the control and you're able to land on your head. Mm-hmm. It's just the control of using your legs instead of your upper body.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and retraining that, which mm-hmm. I'm sure took quite some time.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, first year on the team, like I did more than half my training outside of the water, just doing simulations, doing my dives just on land, mm-hmm. you know, and training my mind and my body to connect. And the proper arm movements, the proper leg kick out, you know, where my head's supposed to be and not move my chest. Like mm-hmm. all these little things and details that my coach really, she put that time into my foundation mm-hmm. of diving. And I think if I would have ended up anywhere, you know, any coach would have been like, oh, you have talent, come dive for me, you know. But like the fact that I ended up here with my coach who, you know, has a really strong background in diving. I mean, she would have competed in the 80 Olympics, but it got boycotted. Like, she's got a background of her being a strong top level athlete, but also being a top level coach.
Yeah.
And my talent mixed with that, like, it just, we paired well together and we were meant to be, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. She gave you the right fundamentals.
Totally.
Now, I notice one thing, you're going to laugh about this. She didn't try and change your twisting position.
Right.
How come?
She says it's useful.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think I asked her at one point because I watch a lot of diving. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I wanted to see what top level diving looked like to know what I wanted to be, you know? And I think I watched how divers twist with their arms here. And, you know, I noticed that I twist really like a gymnast, but like gymnasts twist here, trampolinists twist with their arms down, divers twist with their one arm up and one arm across their chest. Like it is, there were a lot of varieties of twisting that I kind of had to learn. Mm-hmm. And I think I was doing 2.5 twists on 3 meter and making it just fine. And I think I asked her at one point, should I change this? And she said, no, it's useful. We're going to keep it. I said, okay.
Done.
Easy.
I mean, Badiah twists like that.
Huh?
Badiah?
Really?
Yeah, he had twisted his hands in his chest.
He did, that's right.
Yeah. It was very, sometimes he'd come up, I think, but he kept a lot of it. I remember in Russia, he was still twisting like that.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Yep. And it worked for him. I mean, he's got an Olympic gold medal, and I think it's gold, silver, and bronze.
Yes, he's definitely had a couple of those under his belt.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of you wanting to watch a lot of diving, who did you first start watching when you were diving?
So when I came onto the team, there were already pretty top level athletes on the team. And my coach was always like, watch them, like learn from them, steal their technique mm-hmm. and use it for yourself. Okay. And so that was where I started, where my vision of diving kind of, you know, started. And then I started watching a lot more international diving mm-hmm. competitions and just, you know, seeing higher level of diving. And then in 2016, which would have been 3 years after I started diving.
Mm-hmm.
We were going into Olympic trials, and my coach wanted to take a trip to China to just train. And it, you know, went from like, oh yeah, we'll take a 3 week trip there to let's do 4 weeks to let's do five. And then now it was six. And so we spent a good like 5.5 weeks in China training, watching diving, and just, yeah, I just fit in with them. Well, I didn't fit in at that time. I tried to. I still couldn't make a proper entry.
Tried to steal their technique.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there were a lot of days where Jin Lee would just say, hey, like, let's just sit and watch, you know? And so wow. I think that's when my vision of diving really went up. And she really expressed the importance of watching higher level diving, because as soon as my vision of diving goes up, my level of my own diving will go up too.
Your expectations will change.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And yeah. And so I think that's really like what I started watching first. So.
And so you watched a lot, but you didn't watch a lot of film. You were watching a lot in person.
A lot in person. Yeah.
Okay.
I did watch a lot of film though. Like I have my favorite divers. I think that yeah, I who like were, who YouTubed. Are they? Guo Jingjing for sure. Like she's OG.
Queen.
Yeah. I really liked Hutze, like uh-huh. her diving as well. So I just watched a lot of Chinese divers just because I knew that was higher level, you
that
know.
That was the and standard.
Yes. Yep.
And they hold quite a standard.
Yeah. You know, and then I think it transferred into watching international competitions, and I watched Jennifer Abell do 51-54, and I was like, well, why can't I do that? You know, I think that was really a moment in time where I was like, yeah, let's push the boundaries of this sport. Let's mm-hmm. see what I can do. And I was always trying to get new dives. You know, we started as a platform diver for 2016. That was the best chances I had to qualify for an Olympic Games that mm-hmm. year because springboard diving, you know, it just takes time. You know, you have to have experience diving and learning the rhythm of the board and mm-hmm. and all of that. And so I think we pushed so hard to get a 10-meter list to be able to compete at Olympic trials. And then after 2016, it was like, okay, maybe I should kind of just transfer into springboard diving mm-hmm. and just see where this goes and just dedicate all my time and effort onto the springboard. Because if you think about it, like the springboard is my trampoline background.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like you have the power
it's
for
a
it.
Different. It's a different rhythm for sure, but it is the same like fundamentals. And I just think it's really cool that I was able to transfer my trampoline talent to the diving board.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good that you started on 10 meter to eliminate that variable of a moving board to
yes.
then you've got the ability to, all right, let's focus on just the technique, the mechanics, the mm-hmm. takeoffs for, you know, X amount of time. But then you only did that for 2016. And then after 2016, you stopped doing 10 meter.
Yep.
So you only did it for 3 years. Yep. And then what was your list on 10 meter?
It was
what was that last?
I just think of the time when we had to learn the 10-meter list, and I was given the decision or the choice from my coach. Do we want to do a full 10-meter list and learn all the Olympic dives on 10-meter, or do we want to, like, just learn a 10-meter dive to, you know, have a 10-meter list? Mm-hmm. So at the time, I was given – so I did 107B, 407C, 207 – 52-53 and arm stand back twist.
And you had no issues. 1.5
twist.
Them.
No.
And you dove at UNR that doesn't have a 10 meter.
Yeah.
So where'd you learn them?
Well, so because we don't have a 10 meter at UNR, we take training trips to Stanford
okay.
throughout this college season okay. to go train and yeah, get experience and time on the platform. But yeah, at the time Jin Lee had given me the choice. Do you want to learn 305B on 10 meter or 207C? And I think in anybody's right mind, you would be like, yeah, 207C. Yeah. Like, who wants to do 305B?
No, I don't.
No, absolutely not. And so, yeah, so I learned a full 10-meter list, and I was competing individually, and I wanted to compete synchro as well. And I learned all those dives before I even learned my voluntaries and before I even did a lineup on 10-meter.
Really?
So it, yeah, Jinli was scared of my lineups. She was like, if you do a lineup from 10 meter, you're going to injure yourself.
So she sent you up there and just made you do a harder dive.
Yeah. Yeah. And typically I would make better entries with harder dives just because I had less time to think and less time to do weird movements.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah. So then on 10 meter, oh gosh. Yeah. You had no issues learning any of these dives?
I mean, I was scared, but like that trip we took to China, we had done two trips to China. One was our college training trip. And during that time, I got in the water belt. And then I also was in the spotting belt on the trampoline. And so I could do all the dives that I needed to learn, like 407C and 207C, those two especially, I could do in the belt. So I could feel them. I could actually land on my hands, you know, with a coach spotting me. And so I felt confident doing them. And during that time in my life, like, I'm younger, I'm fearless. You know, now you think I would not get on 10 meter to do those dives again.
Yeah, I mean, no, thank you. But you never flopped or anything?
Oh, I flopped hard many times. Okay. Yeah.
I was wondering how that transferred over, if you were able to, you know, not have, at the rate that you were going at and the speed that you were picking things up, I would assume you just picked it up and didn't eat it at all.
Oh, no. Definitely smacked a good deal of times. And I think that's why it maybe have developed this fear now. At that time, I was a little bit more like ignorant. I didn't know like what smacking truly felt like until I actually did it. And then it was like, nope, you have to keep going like past this, you know? And I think it was a challenge for sure, because there were some pretty good smacks of, especially 407, I'd go flying over, and I'd remember like the back of my calves and the bottom of my feet.
Yeah.
Feeling the smack.
Like, yeah. Just pulls on your calves.
Ah, yeah.
You didn't eat it on backs or gainers?
Backs I did. I would go like over. Sometimes I'd go a little bit like short. A lot of times I would miss my hands. Like just.
Oh.
That's not something that I was ever trained for either. And so I would always tape my wrist because I would enter the water and just like, yeah.
Grab your wrist.
Or not even grab. It was just like push the water down or something.
I mean, it happens. I broke my finger grabbing.
Ah.
Which is not. Pinky, huh? Yeah, I know. I was doing first 109 I ever did. I went to grab my hands. I grabbed my pinky and snapped it.
Oh, man.
And I came out and I'm like, the weird part was it didn't hurt at all.
Yeah.
Like there was zero pain. And I'm like, this is odd. And I looked at him like, it's dislocated, but it doesn't hurt.
You have so much adrenaline in you.
I guess after doing the dive, because it was the first one ever. And I go to Randy. I'm like, dude, I think I dislocated my finger. He goes, yeah, that's dislocated.
Oh, no.
And so we went into the doctor and they're like, no, it's not dislocated. That's broken. And I was like, what? Like, no. And then he pulled on it. I was like, oh, that hurts.
Oh, no.
And he's like, all right, we can either put screws in it and have it ready in like 4 to 6 weeks, or you can go and do nothing and hope that it heals right. But if it doesn't, then we have to go have surgery and re-break it. I'm like, just give me the screws.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, all right, okay, done. And then when I had that surgery, I remember going, I was in the dorms, I go to climb in my bed, and they told me, watch out, like your arm doesn't work like normal. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I go to climb into bed and I lift my arm up to like get my arm on bed. I didn't know my tricep didn't work. And so my cast smacked me square in the face.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, that's why my arm doesn't work. Okay, now I get it. So I had to watch out. If I lifted my arm would just come and swing and hit me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Did you have to redevelop that strength of your tricep?
I mean, it was only a couple weeks, and then I could like
you just didn't have function of it. Wow.
Because they numbed something in my armpit, and I couldn't use my tricep. So like it went away after like a day or two.
Funny.
But I couldn't use it for a while. Yeah.
No good, man.
So you went from platform, you did 3 years in platform, then you said, all right, no more platform. 2016, after that trial, you're like, I'm done with it?
Yeah. Yeah, Jinli was the one that was kind of like, let's put all of our focus into springboard and let's just see how far we can get.
Okay.
And then if we want to transfer back to platform diving, we can. You know, we can always go back. But at this point in your career, now you've developed a little bit of experience doing this sport, but now we need to just spend time on the springboard.
Yeah.
And like, that's just what you need is time. And so we dedicated the next couple years to just springboard training.
That's crazy. You've never, I mean, it's just such a short track. I started diving when I was 8 and did springboard from 8 until, I don't know, for 19 years.
Wow.
Until I finally figured it out. So it's like you spent 3 years here and then what? How many years on springboard?
Well, let's see. So 2013 is when I started diving. It's 2023. So this is my 10-year anniversary of diving, which is kind of cool.
Wow. Okay.
So after 2016 is when I committed all my time to springboard. So 2016 until now. So,
okay. And then, but I mean, from 2016 to 2021, what did that look like from, you know, you picked up springboard? What were kind of the benchmarks where you're like, okay, this is getting better. I'm actually figuring this out.
I think getting a full pike list, that was my number one goal. The hardest dive for me to get pike was inward, still is.
Really?
Yeah, just because I had never trained that type of movement ever in my gymnastics career or my trampoline career. And it's just, it is so different. It's all technique. It's all strength. You know, and it's just, it's not a dive that I can just cheat with strength.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a lot of my other dives. I can, you know, make it around to my head and then work on the technique. But this dive, it's like, no, you need the technique first and the strength to combat that and before you can actually improve that dive. And so that was kind of a big benchmark for me, is to get a pike list. I was competing on, you know, springboard throughout my college career. So I really was doing springboard since 2013. And I was even competing 51-54 since 2015.
Oh.
And that was just me trying to get difficulty in my list because I knew that I wasn't consistent. So for me, I was like, okay, let's add in the difficulty. I can do the dive. And if I hit it, it's great. Like, even better. And so I think that's when I really began to see potential on springboard, because I was doing all the dives. I had 51-54 before I even had 405B, you know, so
wow.
It kind of helped counteract that degree of difficulty. Like,
most people think double out would be way harder than an inward.
Maybe. Yeah. But it's not.
So then on inward, I'm sure you watch film of a lot of people on inward.
Yeah.
Who?
Let me think. Wong Han. Well, Siting Mao is one of them.
Another queen right there.
Really strong, yeah. And even Chen Yuan, her inward's so strong. Her toe point's awful. Sorry.
It is. All right.
But I watch these divers because I'm like, they have strong inwards, and I want to learn it.
See, that's crazy. You primarily watch Chinese diving, but I mean, Jin Li is, she's from China. That's her background, so it makes sense.
Yes.
Do you think that attributed to a lot of your growth is always watching that?
I think so. Yeah, I really do, because it also, like, because I was watching that, and like you say, my coach is Chinese, and her technique that she's trying to teach me and enforce with me is that technique that I'm also watching. Yeah. And, you know, I had watched many other techniques of other divers too, and I was like, I don't like that, or I do like this. And I feel like Chinese diving is like, I like all of it, you know, unless you get somebody who has an ugly toe point or whatever. Like, I think that really balanced, those two things paired well together. And it just gave me a lot more consistency of what good technique is, what it looks like, and what it feels like.
And so on this fast track that you had, where was it where you're like, all right, things are getting very serious?
When I had to make a lot of sacrifices in life.
Okay, what are these sacrifices?
Probably like 2015 was really when I was like, okay, I have a chance doing well in college. Mm-hmm. So I started making more sacrifices of, like, you know, hanging out with different people and not going out partying and not snowboarding and mountain biking and all the things that I was doing before. I was like, no, this is getting serious. I want to make these sacrifices because I see it going somewhere.
Yeah.
And after 2016, which would have been my last year of college, was when I made the decision that I want to continue in the sport of diving and try to work my way up in USA Diving. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just ready to just go all in with everything because I saw that there was potential and I knew that the dives that I had were could be Olympic level. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had the coach to also get me there as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the moment of like, yeah, I need to go all in with this and just, yeah, give it everything I have. And that's when I really pursued that.
And then, okay, qualifying for Olympic trials. Where was that? How'd that go down?
In 2021, because it was postponed a year. And for me, that actually was a big benefit because for me, I'm younger in the sport of diving, you'll say. And the more time that I was given actually chose, it was really a benefit mm-hmm. for me. So I was grateful for that. And so when it was postponed a year, that's what I saw it as, you know, as really something that was going to help me. And so I think 2021 came around and by that time we'd gone through training, really heavy training during COVID, even though things were shut down. We had mats in my friend's apartment. So we were doing fast somersaults and, you know, a lot of conditioning exercises. And then my friend was a strength and conditioning coach and she took a barbell and some weights from the weight room and laid out a carpet in her neighborhood. And we just lifted weights 2 times a week and then fast flips 3 times a week. Like it was a lot of training and I got really strong. And for me, that was helpful because it's hard for me to strength train while I'm also diving.
Yeah.
It's easy when I have time away from diving and I can just fully go in with strength training. And that's what I was given. And so I think when we got back in the pool in the water, I had already had so much strength mm-hmm. and it was just getting my dives back.
Yeah.
And so I think going into 2021 Olympic trials, I had more confidence knowing that I really did the work mm-hmm. and I could trust my training. Mm-hmm. And that was exciting for me. And I was competing in 2 events. So I did individual and synchronized with Allison Gibson. And yep. and her and I were kind of coming in as underdogs. And that was something I think both her and I really liked. You know, it didn't good. Put pressure on us. And but yet we still knew we had a chance. And I think that was really exciting for us. And we were also doing 51-54 at that time together as a synchronized pair, which no women in the U.S. synced that dive up, mm-hmm. Let alone internationally. Yep. So I think that also gave her and I a lot of confidence knowing that like we have the DD and I think that was really cool. So yeah, so first, I mean, that was the first event we qualified in mm-hmm. at Olympic trials and I still had my individual to compete in a couple days later. So then I'd already qualified and synchronized. I was like, what is, there's no pressure anymore. Like I already got my ticket to go
yeah.
to Japan. And I think that was really exciting for me. And yeah, and then I just had my dream list of dives individually. Like if you watch the YouTube video of it, Cynthia Potter's like, she doesn't even need to do her last dive to win the Olympic trials. Like,
yeah.
And I look back, I'm like, man, how do we get to that point? Like so unbeatable, you know what I mean? And I think that was like something that I knew Jin Lee had vision of when we were training. I didn't know where we were. There was no benchmarks as to know like where I'm at, where the other divers were, because it's COVID. We didn't have any competitions
yeah.
during that time. And so it was just really cool to like step into like onto those boards in Indy and just feel like, wow, I'm ready. My strength feels there. My dives are more consistent and we did it. So
yeah,
and so I think cool.
From a very outside perspective, I think it was unexpected. Because, you know, I know the diving world. You were mm-hmm. very new in the diving world. I'm like, she's got a gymnastics background, a trampoline background. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as diving-esque as everybody else's. So it was like, oh, mm-hmm. she's new. It's not like, you know, you're new. So mm-hmm. you don't expect to see that. And then I'm like, oh, right. my gosh, this is coming together. This is really coming together. Holy moly, here we go. And I'm like, Whoa, she just put together a huge list that I did not see coming whatsoever.
Right.
Because you traditionally look more like a trampolinist, mm-hmm. but as you grow, your appearance is starting to change more as a diver.
Cool.
But that takes time.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's still definitely a little bit of trampoline in me, mm-hmm. you know? But I like that, to be honest. Like, as much as I want to be 100% diver, it's like, no, like, this is my background. This is what makes me unique. And this is, you know, what got me to where I am today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's different techniques that I'm like, okay, that's not useful. Then that's what I want to drop, you yeah. know? And I think, you know, my coach has always said, you're a tiger. Like, you're a little tiger that's just like chasing after everyone. You know, you're kind of the one that's like, you're just doing the chasing. And
feels good though, doesn't it?
It's a good feeling. Yeah, totally. Because you know you have a chance. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, everybody's got a shot.
And there's always an incentive. There's always something pushing you when yes. you're chasing.
Yep. Yep. And now it's like, okay, Olympic bronze medal. Like, what am I going to chase yeah. after now?
Let's go through that now.
It's so, a whole nother mindset for sure. And, you know, a medal at the Olympic Games, I mean, obviously is like a goal of mine, but I didn't have expectations for it at all. And, you know, my diving after Olympic trials really suffered a lot because I just gave everything, all my strength to Olympic trials. And it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah.
And then to regain that, Olympic trials are in June. Mm-hmm. Olympics are in July. You know this, you've competed. It's yep. such a quick turnaround. And I think that was really, it provided a big challenge for me. But we just kept hitting strength hard. I trained hard until the day we left. We didn't slow down at all because I needed that like strength yeah. rebuild, you yeah. know? And I think it's just really cool to like have made it. My goal into the Olympic Games was just to make it into finals, and to come out with a medal is beyond what my expectations were. And it was a really exciting event for that reason, you know?
Now, was there any point through that list you're like, oh my gosh, this is really going well. Like, I am on my game right now. Was there any point where you're like that? Or do you watch the scoreboard? Do you not watch the scoreboard? How do you pan out in a final? Like, what's your MO?
Well, I think throughout the week, so what was different about Olympic Games is we competed day back to back. So I had prelims one day, the next day was semifinals, the next day was finals. And I just had such a lack of confidence in my diving at that time because I was not diving well. And I knew I just needed another day, you know, and the next day would come and my diving started to go up, and the next day would come and my diving would go up. And I think for me, just getting past prelims into semifinals, I was like, okay, I got another day, you know? And then after semifinals, I was fifth going into finals, and I was like, okay, I got another day. And I feel like I still didn't perform my best list. And so that kind of gave me confidence knowing that I didn't perform my best already. I still have room to grow, and I'm already sitting in fifth. Mm-hmm. Nothing to lose at this point. And throughout, yeah, that finals round, I don't really listen to scores. I kind of pick up on some vibes that are going on. Yeah. Like, what am I feeling? What dives am I hearing? Do I hear a dive that's just gone super over? You hear a big splash. Like, and I heard a couple of those in round three, mm-hmm. I think it was. And it was really surprising from who that mm-hmm. I heard those like scores from. And I was like, okay, so if that person's like kind of out after this round, like they've got some room to pick up. And I was like, okay, my list is going pretty well. Like, headphones on, I don't care. Like, yeah. let's just listen to music and have fun and just do what I need to do to compete my best. And for me, making it through my back in reverse was like the thing that I was like, okay, as long as I make it through those dives, my 107, 51, 54, easy, got it. Mm-hmm. And so I made it through 205, 305, and I was like, okay, we're homebound. And 107, like, had so much energy. And then I get to 51, 54, which is my last dive, and I've had it where I get ahead of myself, where I'm like, okay, like, 51, 54, I trained this dive so well, and then I'm ready. I got this, you know? And I think in that moment, I was like, okay, don't get ahead of yourself. Stay in the moment. Like, you just need a good hurdle. Like, let's just do the dive as to your best of your abilities. And I did. I mean, I was back on the board like a lot, but I'm used to fighting for that dive. And I fought for it and I came up. And even at that time, I didn't really know I medaled. I knew I had a good list for myself, but I didn't know how it like panned out with the rest of the world. And after that, I went back to my towel and I was like looking at the scores, and I'm sitting in first place with a couple people to go yet that are still maybe above me. And they go, and I'm still sitting in first by the time it gets to Chinese diver number one and then Chinese diver number two. And I was like,
oh my,
I medaled. And I went running over to Jin Lee, and I just like, I sat right in front of her. She didn't even know I medaled. She doesn't watch the scores at all. And so we were just like sitting there, both her and I, like kind of clueless. And then she realized it. One coach was like, shook her hand, like, and she was like,
wow,
we did this.
So I got goosebumps. It was a moment where it was just
like, this is unbelievable right now. Like, what just happened? And it's cool because like the night before, I'd visualize my list of what I was going to do that next day. And I saw my dives and how they were going to go down and how they would look if I did them to the best of my abilities. And so I like visualized my dive in my list, and I had seen all those dives that I had just performed. And then after the end of the visualization that night before, I saw myself standing on the podium, and I was like, okay, we're going to just go with this, you know? And I just remember thinking like, because I'm a believer and I like fully believe God has led my path to diving and where I'm at today. And so I was like praying about it too. And I was like kind of scared to pray about it. Like, God, you know, if it's in your will, like maybe I can medal this Olympic Games. But if not, it's okay.
It's okay. It's okay. You know? But if.
But this is like what I want. You tell us like we should come to you with what we want. And like you already know it. But I think like that was really powerful. And so I saw myself standing on the podium in that visualization, and I looked up and I was like, this is all you, God. This is all you. And it's just crazy. That whole next day, like that exact thing happened. I was standing on the podium, and I have pictures of me on the podium with like looking up just like, you did this.
That's so cool. That is so cool. So, right?
Yeah, we both have goosebumps.
It's fun to relive, isn't it?
It's so cool. Like, yeah, it's really cool. And it's unbelievable to me still. It's surreal. But now I'm feeling like I'm still new in the sport. I'm like,
you let's are just in a see. Sense. Yeah.
I am. Let's just see how far we can go. There's still more for me to achieve. And I believe I'm not at my peak. So I think that's what's exciting for me. And my coach is on board with it too. She's like, yeah, we're not at your peak yet.
Yeah.
And I think within this last couple months of training, I've shown a lot more consistency in training. Mm-hmm. And that just shows me that I'm really not at my peak. So I think it's exciting to like go forward a little bit more with this. And I did just have a hip surgery, so we got that out of the way a year ago, and now I'm back, and I'm super pumped to be back at it again and not burnt out, which is cool.
Yeah.
So you need time away from sport to not burn out.
It's very important to have that. Yeah. It's good to have a balance and keep yourself healthy.
Yes, so absolutely.
You're going to Fukuoka this year?
Yep. World Championships.
I'll see you in Fukuoka.
Yeah, you're
going. Excited to cheer you on.
Cool.
And you've got a very bright future, so I'm excited to see how this pans out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You've always been somebody I look up to, too.
Thank you.
Remember on the boards in Budapest in 2017, that was, like, my first time really, like, talking with you and, like, diving with you. And I just remember the first thing I said, I was, we have the same color chamois.
Yeah. Amazon, right?
Yeah. I don't remember where I got it, but... Yeah,
it's funny you remember. I don't
same color as Duraflex springboards. Like,
yeah,
look at you now working for them, and we're really grateful to have you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for joining today.
Whoop whoop!
Yeah,
you're welcome. Cool. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks for the chat.
Yeah, that's fun. That was a blast.